passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and Wei Ting here on Monday night, February the 19th. Hello, Wei. Happy Family Day.
Happy Family Day. President's Day, I believe, in the U.S.
President's Day as well. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Or just Monday.
It could be a mundane Monday for others out there as well. If you're not celebrating, did you do anything for Family Day?
Yeah, kind of, you know, took it easy. We went to the auto show. Which actually, any excursion with a toddler is anything but taking it easy, I suppose. But that was a lot of, you know, it was a lot of fun. These aren't typically things I would ever want to, like, I never feel like doing on my own, but everything's new, you know, with the child. So yeah, we had a really good time.
Okay. Well, that sounds like an enjoyable, relaxing day.
I mean, I don't know much about relaxing, you know, like I'm letting this kid kind of roam as like people are, you know, like in these big crowds, and he doesn't want to stay seated in the stroller. So I let him walk around, and then you just have to watch him really close because he doesn't know exactly what's going on or where he's going. So, yeah, but it was fun.
My daughter's figured out the music player in our like living room area. She likes to just crank the volume on this, and it's just so loud. Like, Evie, can we turn this down a little? Put your headphones on. Just put your headphones on. Okay, then. That's the answer there. So
reasonable. Yeah. You can change for her.
I'm going to have to, because if I hear this soundtrack for either Frozen or Trolls one more time, my head is just... like, I'm having dreams about these songs. Like, they are so repetitive. And they just... they'll listen to the song, and it's not like we'll go through the soundtrack. It's like it'll be the same song like 18 times.
Of course, yeah.
It's torture.
Well, you should put
I'm
on
ready
headphones.
For them to let it go, because I'm sure ready to let it go.
Yes. Okay,
that's the music front from myself. Well, we have quite the week coming up. We have got the return of Rewind Away this coming Thursday, where we are traveling to March of 2008. Way, we are going to the Citrus Bowl. And if the question was, find something more painful than the Frozen soundtrack, well, folks, there was a band called Rev Theory. WWE loved these guys, and they played their song no less than 35 times on this pay-per-view. And you are going to get your fill of Rev Theory. What was Rev Theory? It was 2008 in the form of a song. Think of every awful t-shirt design, every terrible $300 pair of jeans that you would scoff at in musical form. That's what this Rev Theory song was.
Okay. The soundtrack to WrestleMania 24.
24, yes. Mm. Someone said this encapsulates this show, Rev Theory. So that's coming up. We'll chat about Floyd Mayweather's sojourn into professional wrestling with The Big Show. We will talk about the WrestleMania headliner, Jimmy Corderas, closing the show. And we will also be discussing Ric Flair's career-threatening match, where if he loses, his career would be threatened, but not destroyed. This would be you want a career to continue, you're going to TNA. So this is a tale of from Orlando to Orlando, the Ric Flair retirement journey.
You have to stay in Orlando if you lose this match, basically.
You are confined to Orlando for the next 5 years, okay? That's what was at stake here. That was, and Shawn Michaels sending him to TNA. I'm sorry. I love you, but there you go. So that's coming up on Thursday, postwrestlingcafe.com. Because of Elimination Chamber, we will not be doing Rewind to SmackDown this Friday because Elimination Chamber, I don't know if you noticed, Wei, but no matter what time zone you are in, it's starting early on Saturday. And we are going to be going live Saturday at noon Eastern time on the free feed on this YouTube channel. So hit subscribe now so you don't have to be searching for us on Saturday at noon. We will be coming at you and we will run through the show from Perth, Western Australia. And then Kate and John Cena will have you covered Saturday night for the Bryan Danielson, Jun Akiyama edition of Collision. And then the weekend wraps up with a new beginning in Sapporo review from Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson.
Now, is that covering both nights?
Yes.
Which will include both of Kazuchika Okada's final New Japan Pro
Wrestling. This is Okada's farewell to New Japan Pro Wrestling. Mm.
Career-threatening New Japan Pro Wrestling matches.
Yes. Or might be career-prospering match, depending on what happens with him. But that's all coming up this weekend. But if you want to hit the rewind button to Sunday night, we thought, what can the NWA podcast aspire to? If you thought that they were going to surpass 5 hours, well, this was the month for you. February 2024, they did the impossible. They went 5+ hours on Sunday night. How these four have the stamina is beyond me, but you can go check it out, break it up into, it's like meals. Okay. And they've got you prepared for the week
or the month, you know, or however long it takes.
Depends on what kind of an eater you are.
I mean, it's you enjoy that at your own pace, and it's very enjoyable in any sort of setting. You know, some might just sit through the entire 5 hours, five and a half plus, I think, this month. Lots of interesting discussion as always from the advocates.
Okay, so go check out all of their great work. Into the news we go. Tonight, Lee Cole, who we've discussed on this show, he released his interview with a ring boy from 1986 and 1987 in the World Wrestling Federation. So the way this was structured, he had a co-host on, and they sort of set the table with a lot of the background information that people listening to this will probably be familiar with, some of the more specifics about the ring boy scandal, who the players were. And then about 25 minutes into the show, they start airing clips of the interview that Lee Cole conducted with this individual who did not appear by video. There was just a photo of him and just goes by Sean. He did not want to disclose his last name. But for some context, he worked on the ring crew beginning in 1986 when he was about 16 years old, and he was in foster care at the time and stayed with the company until August of 1987 when he left to go join the army. And he had several tours of Iraq. He then later became a police officer. And when he learned of Tom Cole's story, this would have been in 1992. He certainly was familiar with some of his own experiences. So it sounds like they're going to be breaking this interview up. And it was a little like all over the place because you were airing the interview and then they would pause and react to certain answers as they're going along. So, and then it just kind of ends abruptly at the end, and it looks like they're going to continue to roll the rest of this out. But some of the notes from this, first of all, like this individual, Sean, I mean, he came across like very credible, like just the details he had. I mean, this is someone that had kept notes of when he was on the ring crew, like down to remembering a date of when he happened to be ringside to hold the WWF title when they were doing a double shot that day in Philadelphia and then in Baltimore at night for a cage match between Hogan and Kamala. And that totally checks out. There was a February 14th show that they ran Philadelphia in the afternoon and Baltimore at night. And it was headlined by a cage match, but he had, like, it looks like he kept like contemporaneous notes of like his itinerary at the time, what towns he was going to. And again, he was in foster care and then links up and was like, Mel Phillips was the one. He was based in Philadelphia, so he would get picked up by Mel Phillips and they would travel to a lot of the Philadelphia shows. And then he didn't get into any like graphic details, but did describe staying at motels with Mel Phillips. They would stay in the same room and conveyed, you know, some of the accusations you've heard of Mel Phillips about grabbing at feet, pulling the feet near his crotch, sitting on top of him, and at times being in his underwear around, like, this is like an underage boy, and believed that Mel Phillips was grooming him. And he mentioned the fact that there was a well-known wrestler that had warned him to be careful around Mel Phillips. Didn't have any specific accusations towards Terry Garvin, but did state that when he was around him, he felt nervous, had a bad vibe from Terry Garvin. And also was asked about, did Mel Phillips take you across state lines? And he said, yes. Like, he was in Philadelphia, but he would be taken to Baltimore. He'd go to New York, went as far as Connecticut to the company warehouse. And I mean, this is where you're looking at, you know, the potential violation. If, you know, Mel Phillips was taking underage kids across state lines and what was happening on the road with some of these kids, I mean, it just kind of paints the picture for you. So, I mean, there are only so many of the Ring Boys that have actually gone on the record with their names. And this would be the third one, at least that I'm aware of. Of course, Tom Cole, Chris Lose was another one in 1992. And I mean, this is one we don't have his full name, but I mean, certainly does, you know, provide, at least in regards to Mel Phillips. And we don't know what more is to come from this interview that he conducted. So it's up on Lee Cole's YouTube channel, Wrestling with the Devil, if you search for it. And it's the latest video. And we will see if this gets any kind of traction. I think that there is certainly a lot that can be focused upon with this early 90s Ring Boy scandal, but are enough people going to be connecting that with the current ongoing scandals of a different nature, but trafficking nonetheless? And like, I think if you are looking to paint a picture of a culture, I mean, this was something that was, you know, Mel Phillips at one time was let go by the WWF because of issues that they had heard about him with kids. And then he's brought back shortly thereafter with the understanding that he was going to steer clear of kids. Like, that is a really like alarming fact that here was somebody that it's very hard to paint the picture that they did not know what was going on with this guy and that he was fired at one point in 1988 and brought back shortly thereafter. I mean, this was, Mel Phillips is no longer alive. He died in 2012, but just a frightening individual that, I mean, I think that there's, we probably don't and will never know the full extent of like the scope that he had, but you do see these patterns among kids that had come from like broken homes, and you know, here they were being taken on the road, and God knows what was happening, but we've certainly got at least enough details that it paints a very, very just horrific picture.
You know, it's whether or not this will perhaps break into a sort of mainstream collective attention, I'm not exactly sure, but if there's a chance and there's a time for this particular story to garner interest, it would be right now. And at the very least, I think people that are looking to dig deeper into everything that's going on with in the history of this company's culture as it relates to sexual abuse, this is the time that I think people are at least in a position where they might be most interested and maybe most, I guess, capable of, I don't know, pushing it towards some sense of justice, if one could even exist.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of the key people involved in this are no longer around anymore. I mean, Lee Cole is someone, he knows this inside and out, this story, and it's a very personal story for him, given, you know, Tom Cole, you know, taking his life back in 2021. So like, this is something that is extremely, you know, pressing for Lee Cole, that, I mean, he just knows this inside and out, and probably has a lot more information that he has not reported publicly, out of, you know, confidence from others and what he has gathered over the years. But it's an interview, like, you know, it's not a comfortable listen. None of this stuff is, I mean, day in and day out, this is just, it's just a lot of stuff that is coming to the surface, or that you're revisiting with a different lens, that you are looking at things in a different way now that all of this has come out. And I think a lot of people are sort of, you know, sensing that. It's a very, it's very hard to separate these stories from everything else that are covered day to day within professional wrestling, at least for me.
Yeah, is it affecting the way you're watching Raw tonight, for instance?
I would just say, like, it to me, this stuff is overshadowing everything. You know, we'll get into it more on Thursday. Like, I really had a hard time watching this WrestleMania show that we have to talk about. I mean, for advance warning, like, Ashley Massaro was on this card. It's like, you just, I don't know. I certainly can't separate the two watching and not having that this feels so much more of significance than any kind of WrestleMania build or any of the stuff that's happening. To me, like, this is front and center, the biggest stuff that is going on in the industry right now. And there are people that don't want to acknowledge that, but that's what this is.
It is. Yeah.
Moving onward, we'll kind of stay on this topic. So there is a law firm out of Chicago, Pintus and Mullins. They are injury lawyers, and they are putting out a call for anyone that has been sexually abused or exploited by Vince McMahon or anyone affiliated with WWE and UFC. They have set up a site at WWESettlements.com, and it looks essentially that they are trying to garner information and names in the event of a potential class action lawsuit. Like, that's what this feels like. And they're putting out the call for anybody to reach out, whether you had experienced abuse or witnessed abuse in the company. And the fact that, you know, this is what Ann Callis is trying to do as well with the Janelle Grant suit. Like, based on the interview she's done, like, they are looking for other people to come forward and add their names to that. So whether this amounts to anything, I mean, it does tell you that there is obvious interest in this, and giving people that might be leery of coming forward, they do have the avenues to go forward. And you can do it in many different ways, but I think that's a really tough decision for any of these victims out there that have a story to tell. And I'm sorry, like, it's, I can't imagine how many stories are out there. Like, I don't think you can be naive to the fact that, like, what have we just seen the tip of the iceberg, and what you are subjecting yourself to. It certainly rang true with me when we were speaking with Tim Marchman last week about, you know, some of these women. And it's just, it's not only the aspect of having to relive something that they've probably tried very, very hard to just compartmentalize and just move on from. There's the revisiting of that. It's putting it in a public forum. It's also the reaction that they're going to get online from, like, a fan base. And that's, it's awful, but that is the society we live in, that here you are, that are going to put some of the most traumatic, probably the most traumatic event in your history out there for consumption. And God knows what you are going to be putting yourself through. Like, I cannot blame anyone that just would rather just stay anonymous and not want to go through with this. But it's also something where it's there is strength in numbers as well. And it's, you know, obviously every person's choice to make. It's, but it's a very difficult one to do.
Right. Yeah. I can't really speak to know how it might feel to, you know, maybe be somebody who might be affected by something like this and is maybe tasked with the pressure of like coming forward with it. But I do get the sense that the more people that speak up about it, hopefully the less, I guess, the less alone, it can feel, and maybe the more confidence people can feel about it. So let's see if any sort of, if this results in anything, and let's see if more people come out and speak.
We have one more rough story to go through, and that was on Saturday night. A group by the name of Dynasty Wrestling had a surprise for its audience, an appearance unadvertised of the former Velveteen Dream, Patrick Clark, for their show in Albany over the weekend. And this has drawn a lot of criticism after this was revealed that Patrick Clark showed up and then faced a surprise opponent on the spot in front of this crowd. And I think for a lot of people, number one, it's, you know, the fact that, you know, Patrick Clark comes with the accusations against him that I think many people are very much concerned by. Number two, at the very least, is that not advertising this in advance is something that, you know, if you're going to book Patrick Clark, I think you owe it to your audience to at least give them warning. This is what we're doing. We are booking this person. And then you can decide if you want to buy a ticket or not. You can support this. Conversely, you can also have the option not to support this. Doing it in this way, I just thought was a really tacky way to do it and not advertise it in advance.
Dynasty, I guess, defended their decision to book, yes, Patrick Clark by tweeting, "Last night, we did what most others wouldn't. We took a risk on a person and gave them an opportunity for a second chance to fulfill their, in capital letters, dream. We stand by that decision. Thank you to the Packed House for last night's event."
Well, that's fine. I would say that it would be fair to your audience that you announce this in advance. I think they did not want to take that risk.
Yeah. I guess it's certainly he's one of those figures that I think makes a lot of people uncomfortable. I at this point am not even too sure what sort of the results of the investigations are, or like where these allegations stand. Where do they stand?
I mean, there was no investigation beyond the one that WWE stated that they looked into it and they found nothing there. I mean, it was WWE's decision. They did not cut him at that point. That was in 2020. It was the following year that they did cut him. And you have had the different accusations that have come out. I mean, he did do the interview with Chris Van Vliet, where he was giving his defense of the accusations as well. I think it's just, to me, at the very least, whether you agree with Patrick Clark being booked or not, I just think you owe it to your audience to be fair about it and advertise that in advance and not do it in a way where it's this surprise appearance. Because to me, like, that's just not playing fair with your audience. And that's my opinion on things.
Well, the audience can let Dynasty know how they feel by the time they have their next show and whether or not they'll be buying a ticket.
Yeah. And some, maybe they care, maybe they won't, but at least give them that option. So we will continue on to more positive stories. Did you get to see any of Michael Oku and Will Ospreay from Sunday?
I started the match. I have not finished it yet.
Yeah, it's a lengthy one, but I thought it was incredible. We asked if this was going to top their match from 2 years ago. I thought it did, and then some. This was just an incredible presentation. As much as like Michael Oku and Will Ospreay are going to get so much praise, like the part of this program, like Amira was a huge part of this entire presentation, from the last match and her work during it, the promo to build up this match between them, and then in the actual match, I mean, they just Will Ospreay was such a despicable heel in this match when the only way to win is pinfall, submission, or Amira could throw in the towel. And Ospreay's got the bloody towel with Oku's blood on it from the last time. And he hands it to Amira at one spot during the match, and she just spits in his face. So Ospreay just kicks her down to the ground. And I just thought she was fantastic in this match. Oku's selling was incredible. He gets busted open. We had both guys bleeding throughout this. But, man, you had callback spots. There was a tribute to Curtis Chapman during this. And, like, the final 10 minutes, the commentary was just tremendous. Like, the whole story of this was laid out so well. And in the end, Michael Oku getting his big victory here with the half crab after, and Amira giving the big middle finger as Oku pulls Ospreay into the center and he taps out. To me, it's going to be like neck and neck, at least this early into the year, with this and that Danielson Zack Sabre Jr. match for me in terms of the best match I've seen this year. And we're at February 19th.
Yeah. Let's see if it, how long that those two even stay in the top five by year's end. We are very early into the year right now.
Yeah. Definitely go out of your way to check this out. It's on the Rev Pro streaming site, and at Crystal Palace. They said it was like 2,000 people. I mean, it was just electric, the atmosphere for this entire thing. And this is, you can look at the length of this match. It certainly didn't feel like it. I mean, it just flowed. Just a tremendous match presentation. And on top of that, you had Tony Khan in attendance at Crystal Palace. And as soon as the match is over, it's like the performance of Will Ospreay was done as the heel. And now he was the departing star who is off to AEW. And he just gave like this heartfelt statement, thanking the audience, thanking Tony Khan for changing his life. And pretty much just, you know, he's off now to Wembley Stadium and the next stage of his career. So it was just a really great, end to this show with the match, the big win for Michael Oku, and then you got the farewell from Will Ospreay, which, I mean, if this guy is going to do the odd independent, you would think that Rev Pro is probably the place that he would be popping up at a later date. But I think his schedule is really going to be just exclusive to AEW for the time being. Like New Japan, Rev Pro, I think that his focus is just going to be there for now. And probably it should be a while before he does something big outside of there, unless there's some strategic reason to do so.
Yeah. For the conservation of his body, I would say, and also maybe for the conservation of like his, I don't know, the specialness to a Will Ospreay match, maybe that's the route he takes, you know, maybe similar to the Bucks, where, I mean, they did a very similar sort of like goodbye to the Indies. And since then have really, I don't know if they've made any outside appearances from AEW, at least, you know, in terms of having a full on match. That could be Will Ospreay. So, yeah.
So there you have it. That was the big highlight from Rev Pro. And then we move on to our next story, and that involves just what's coming up later on this week. We have a taped edition of NXT on Tuesday night, and this will feature Lyra Valkyria against Shotzi. And this is what the whole commercial was like built around, is this match. And this is the one where Shotzi gets hurt. So they're obviously not going to edit around that. It'll be interesting to see how they handle this with the legitimate injury to Shotzi and then Lash Legend taking her place. But Legend also has a match with Kalani Jordan on this show. There's a number one contenders match with Duke Hudson and Andre Chase against Axiom and Nathan Frazier. JC Jane takes on Ariana Grace, Josh Briggs against Brooks Jensen, and Roxanne Perez against Ren Sinclair, with Oba Femi defending the North American title against Lexus King. So that is a lot of matches in a 2-hour window. Unlike tonight's Raw that saw 5 matches in 3 hours, but lengthy matches.
That'll probably be the difference. Yeah. I'm very curious to see how they present the Shotzi injury and, Lash Legend impromptu matchup. I think reality is the best, storytelling that they could have in this scenario. So let's see how they present it.
And for Wednesday night's Dynamite in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they've announced individual matches for Deonna Purrazzo and Toni Storm, but not listing opponents yet. FTR against Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli, And then Samoa Joe with Swerve Strickland and Brian Cage against Hangman Page, Hook, and Rob Van Dam.
Yeah. We are how many weeks away from Revolution right now?
Two.
One, two. Yeah, 2 weeks away. So let's see how they heat this one up. And I'm particularly interested to see how a very heel Hangman Page at this point will be interacting with a very babyface Hook and Rob Van Dam.
Yeah, we'll see. What do you think is the main event of this show? Is it the tag or is it this six-man?
I could see the six-man.
All right. Well, we will find out. On to Raw we go. But first, it is time to take a quick timeout because we're hearing those voices in our head. And now you can see them in front of your eyes.
It is 2024, and tracking technology from advertisers, ISPs, and hackers is getting more sophisticated than many of us can understand. Something you can do to give yourself a bit more peace of mind this year is to protect your browsing by investing in a trusted VPN like NordVPN. Voted best VPN for privacy of 2023 by security.org, Nord is one of the most established and reputable VPN providers in the field. NordVPN is also something I use every day to access geo-blocked online streaming services like AEW+. By far the best way of watching AEW programming commercial-free with on-demand access to AEW's entire TV archive. But perhaps the most value I've gained from using Nord has been the ability to unlock cheaper prices to online content from other parts of the world. And from now until March 20th, when you sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, receive 4 bonus months at discount pricing on all 2-year plans. Plus, users in the US, Canada, UK, and Australia receive an Uber Eats voucher valued from $10 to $30 with their standard, plus, complete, or ultimate plan. Again, that's nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Sign up for as low as $2.91 a month and enjoy some free Uber Eats along with all the benefits of a premium VPN like Nord's.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
10 out of 10.
The deal, you mean?
No, your voice. The deal is like a 12.
Oh, the deal is just a bonus, I guess. Yes. Thank you very much to our sponsors.
All right. And on to Raw, presented by TKO.
I guess technically, yes. Mm-hmm. They are, they pay for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And we got some interaction, some integration.
I feel like one of the likely unlikely from the best of show has already been answered.
What, Michael Chandler on Raw?
Or just like a UFC fighter or something.
Oh, okay. Well, I think we always thought we'd see an appearance by one. We didn't predict if he would take his shirt off or not.
Well, we didn't get to see that part.
No, we didn't. But Pat McAfee definitely wanted to paint the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a sold out show tonight at the Honda Center, over 11,000 people, according to WrestleTix. And we are kicking things off with Drew McIntyre and Cody Rhodes. Now, I know you're asking, what's the story? The story is a 93 rating against an 89 rating in 2K24. That's what's at stake. Do you get to improve your rating if you beat the guy above you? Does Drew's rating increase?
I don't believe the ratings change like over the course of the year. Oh. I'm pretty sure it's like a one-time, you know, once a year type of thing. So we'll see. I mean, I'm sure it'll have some effect on next year's rating.
Okay. The Dragon Screw is hit by Cody in the ropes and he goes for the figure four, but Drew gets to the rope. Drew then grinds his boot into Cody's face. And then we get into a disaster kick, a Cody cutter, and they're just going for the big near falls. Crossroads gets stopped with a knee strike and then both go to the floor with a clothesline. So we get a second commercial break. Future Shock is blocked as Cody hits the pedigree, and then he goes for the Cody cutter and is hit with the Glasgow Kiss in midair, hits the Future Shock, Cody kicks out. So now he's got to go for a double springboard Cody cutter. Need to get that extra bounce for the Cody cutter. Still not enough to keep Drew down. So then Cody, he's powering up, and then he points to the WrestleMania sign, and he gets all the power of WrestleMania through his veins. When Jimmy Uso runs down, he's knocked off the apron, but behind the referee's back. Solo Sikoa hits Cody with the Samoan spike, and then a Claymore keeps Cody down. Drew pins Cody in 19 minutes and 41 seconds.
Mm-hmm. You know, crowd was so hot for this match. They were almost treating this like it was like their version of WrestleMania. And I thought that was pretty incredible because at this point, Drew is already in the chamber. Cody already has his match. There really is nothing at stake with the result of this. But yet, like, they were wrestling this like it was, you know, the final, I don't know, they were the final two in the Rumble or something. Each of them were, like, looking at the WrestleMania sign. Cody was pointing at the WrestleMania sign as if this match had some outcome, like, effect on that, on WrestleMania. But the crowd was into it. You know, the crowd was reacting as if, like, there were some great stakes here. Like, it was life or death whether or not Cody won. And I think it was a very effective match and a very entertaining match as a result. It was the type of match that showed you clearly just how hot Cody Rhodes is right now. He completely feels like he's the product's main character a month out from WrestleMania.
There's no doubt. I mean, he's red hot. I meant to mention it, but not only did we have the sellout tonight, but these house shows that they did over the weekend, they did 7,500 in Oakland on Saturday, which that alone is a really strong house show number. Then yesterday in Fresno, they did over 9,000 for a show. And this was Cody and Nakamura in the main events. Like, it tells you they are just so hot at the moment. When you're drawing 9,000 for a house show, that's a phenomenal number.
And no special attraction, no Rock, no CM Punk even. This is like the roster that's with you full time. It's really incredible. I love the finish here. I mean, it was Drew accepting the Bloodline's help and basically, you know, turning into a hypocrite here. I thought Cody losing does not affect him in the least. If anything, it might just make him that much more of a sympathetic babyface here. And of course, for storyline purposes, it motivates Cody to finally accept Rollins' help against the Bloodline.
Michael Cole is calling Drew a hypocrite, complaining about the Bloodline's interference for all this time, and then he benefits from it. He was disgusted by him. Then we had, first of all, they had an ad for the return of the A&E programming this week. So for Rivals, it's going to be Triple H against The Rock.
Mm-hmm. Convenient.
Yeah. And then a Legends biography on Randy Orton this Sunday.
So. And you do hear The Rock's voice. So it seems to suggest it might be a fresh interview from The Rock for that episode, I would think. I mean, maybe.
I am sure they can comb through the archives to find The Rock talking about Triple H that at their disposal.
Yeah.
I would say if I'm The Rock, I'm like, you know what, guys, this is one for the library. I think we're good. Andrade vignette, he notes he's a third-generation luchador. Even my wife is a wrestler. He defines his destiny, and his destiny is here in WWE. The era of Andrade El Idolo has begun.
This was such a beautiful video package. Maybe, like, in terms of pre-production, maybe the best thing I've seen out of the Andrade character. I mean, this is coupled now with, I think, his, you know, new ability to be able to cut promos in English. And it's at the point now where he's not just able to speak English, but I felt in this video package, he was able to emote very effectively. Good script, plus, like, the excellent production here, the backgrounds, the music, the editing, the camera shots. I think all of it was able to take the promo that we've seen in its sort of raw form in AEW to another level, and it made, in effect, this guy look so damn cool. They were, like, playing a lot with the continued, like, wordplay around Destino, you know, which calls of course, you know, his to his connection to Los Ingobernables, and I thought they struck a pretty good balance between English and Spanish lines here as well. So another A+ video package for Andrade.
Well, you have always said, Wei, it's very tough to make a debut when we're in the lead up to WrestleMania. You can get lost in the shuffle. So this was a very ballsy decision on the WWE's behalf. But we got the debut of Pat McAfee's Telestrator to give us a breakdown of Solo Sikoa getting involved. Yes, we got to see Drew's eyes. I'm glad that they gave us this this focus, but the best was Solo Sikoa and his vision, sensing his target, and then winding up with the Samoan spike on Cody. And this, they tried this a few times throughout the night. Was this Bobby Heenan? No, it was not. But it looks like the Telestrator is here to stay.
Yeah, wrestling and telestrators, I mean, I guess the WWE especially, they've had a bit of a history. My favorite was always Jerry Lawler when he would actually draw like a really funny photo on top of like a still image. Don't really get that with Pat McAfee here, but like this, I just kind of felt was more of their influence of trying to fold in a lot of like, you know, sports like presentation. I'm assuming the NFL has, you know, a very similar technology like this, and like drawing the eyes on Solo, I just kind of almost felt like it was them showing off like, hey, isn't this cool?
Did I introduce my telestrator here?
Yeah,
I can actually do this on my other computer,
so. Can't really say it adds a whole lot to my experience as a viewer, but it gives Pat sort of like a signature thing for him to do. And maybe it's a decent little twist on a typical instant replay recap.
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
You don't like it. You hate it.
No, I don't. You can see like they are adding, I'm sure that this is a lot of the influence of Lee Fitting, who is the producer that they added. Like, here's the guy that comes from ESPN. You're getting all of like the walkthroughs at the back when they're arriving at the building. We're getting like more stats and
the video packages too tonight, at least several of them, like with the Drew Cody match, felt very different from your typical WWE video package. You had like narration with like a guy that I swear like sounds like an NFL Films type of narrator or something like that. I've enjoyed the sort of like differences and like, you know, risks that they've been taking production wise.
Adam Pearce is with Cody, who maintains he's fine. And Seth Rollins walks in, just looks at Cody, pats him on the leg, and walks out. And that was Seth Rollins' entire role on tonight's show, was this. He didn't say a word.
Well, listen, I mean, a look sometimes says more than any words could say. This was an I told you so look. And I think the glance itself was more than anything he could say. Listen, not everybody needs to come to the show and, you know, have like, I don't know, two pages full of dialogue to make their time worthwhile.
Okay, yeah.
You deliver the story.
The two pages of dialogue is coming on. You got to tune into the pay-per-view for that on Saturday. That's
true.
Two pages of dialogue.
Yes, that is true. Probably more than two pages.
Then it was time for the last / first chance battle royal. So if you missed out on your shot to get in, or you just are employed at WWE, you got into this match. This was the preview graphic. And we had Shayna Baszler, Meechin, Elba Fire, Zelina Vega, and Zoe Stark, joined by the returning Raquel Rodriguez. Look at this difference here of who they just decided to add to this. So Raquel Rodriguez is back. She's been out since December. Candice LeRae, Indy Hartwell, the big sentimental favorite to go home to Australia, Chelsea Green, Natalia, Tegan Knox, Xia Li, Ivy Nile, Electra Lopez, Maxine Dupree, Valhalla, Isla Dawn, Katana Chance. I don't think Caden Carter was in this. Katana Chance definitely was, but I don't think Carter was.
And she's not on the graphic.
No. Okay. No. So maybe I don't know what's up with Caden Carter. And B-Fab, everyone's pick, B-Fab to take this one. So Maxine was gone in 50 seconds. So that was that. She was not going to the elimination chamber.
Probably for the best on yeah.
Well, we just had a procession of eliminations. Raquel got to eliminate half the squad here. Green shoves LeRae into the post. She's knocked out. Indy Hartwell goes for a springboard. She's just yanked off by Shayna Baszler, and she's gone. It wasn't even a dramatic end, and that was it for Indy Hartwell's dream of going to her home country. But there's always, I was going to say next year. They probably won't be in Australia next year for this event. Raquel stops the tornado DDT by Elba Fire and just runs across the ring and tosses her out. This was like Marab with Henry Cejudo on the weekend. Nile eliminates Natalia with a forearm shot, and then Baszler and Stark work together, dumping out Nile. So the final four, Baszler, Stark, Raquel Rodriguez, and Meechin, or is it the final four? Baszler and Stark double clothesline Meechin out. Raquel then eliminates Baszler. Stark is knocked off the apron, but Baszler catches her, and then Stark is booted out. Raquel thinks she's won, but WWE, they love the, wait a minute, someone's not been eliminated finish. So Chelsea Green runs in from behind, but it's reversed, and Raquel tosses out Chelsea Green. I actually like this ending with Chelsea, and Raquel wins in 14 minutes and 2 seconds to become the sixth member of the chamber on Saturday.
Yeah. I thought ultimately this was a good, very effective reintroduction for Raquel Gonzalez. It effectively put the spotlight on her and sends her into the chamber with at least a decent amount of, like, you know, fan reaction. She didn't make the Rumble, but they gave her this spot. It's, of course, interesting to discuss Raquel in this place because there is this leaked image that had appeared for the Elimination Chamber preview on the WWE's website or something, and a lot of people saw this. It was like a blurred image consisting of the finalists here, and everybody is ended up making it into the match with the exception of Jade Cargill, who was originally on this graphic, and she at least her role has been replaced by Raquel Gonzalez. So, you know, either Jade was supposed to be in this match, and because of the leak, they decided to change it, or maybe they just simply felt like there was a better role for Jade.
Is this the best match to debut her in?
No, I don't think so either.
If she's not winning, I don't think that would be the move. I think that'd be the right move to hold off on her. Like, unless she's winning, why beat her when you don't have to?
Yeah, I mean, well, you expect the booking to make her look dominant. You could have said the same thing with the Royal Rumble. She didn't win the Rumble, but she made a big enough impression. You know, it'd be a loss that she gained something out of it. Maybe it
this one she has to be pinned.
Yeah, the pinning is probably going to be a bit of a tricky one, but probably better that she's not in it. Yeah.
Jey Uso was in the back with a public service announcement. The wait is over, and it's time to end Gunther's reign. Allow me to reintroduce myself. So we got Jay-Z here.
Mm-hmm.
Cole and Pat interview Rhea Ripley and Nia Jax, I guess via satellite, via backstage. It is the first time that Rhea gets to wrestle in Australia while in WWE, and she mentions times she wanted to quit and had to remind herself who she was, and she doesn't need to fit in, and now she's the most dominant woman in WWE. Nia Jax points out, I'm twice your size and I have triple your talent. And she's going to squash her, and mommy will go home crying to her mommy. Rhea says, Nia, you're going to crumble in Perth. Your nightmares will become a reality. And Nia's just left there shaking. She's so angry at this. How dare you state that my nightmares will become my reality? I wouldn't say this was a face-to-face that at the end I was, oh my God, take my money. This was, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a bit too brief, and they didn't really get into anything, I think, so personal or like heat-generating that made it memorable. It was fine. It reminded you about the match, but like for how I think popular Rhea Ripley is, I think her promos are like getting better. She's sounding more and more confident, but like she's not at, there's room to improve, I guess, is all I'm trying to say.
Then we go to the Netflix reps who were in the front row.
This is weird.
No identification of any of these people. It's just the Netflix team that was here to watch Raw, and they got front row seats.
I mean, it wasn't weird. It completely, like, you understand it and it makes sense. But, like, it's weird that they were all seemingly dressed in black, like they were the Shield or something.
How much did that beer cost that woman at the Honda Center? Like over $25.
She works for Netflix, and she's obviously high up enough that she got these you know, featured seats. So I don't think it matters much to her.
Yeah, that's what your password crackdown is going towards. The extra large.
Yeah, but this was weird. Like they didn't key them. Oh, I guess you see Netflix. The Netflix logo in the background. Yeah, so that was it.
I was waiting for them to say they're Netflix and they're here to chill.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yes. Have they done this in the past where they would just show like corporate people attached to any company?
I don't think Fox ever got this. Yeah.
Yeah. Nor USA.
Yeah. No, I never seen like Bonnie Hammer just like randomly during the heyday. But there they were. This is what $5 billion buys you. Okay. Why you get a shout out on screen. Then it was time for a new truth judgment day, a timeline hosted by Jackie Redmond. So we are doing kind of our Entertainment Tonight / kind of expose here on R-Truth with a little walk and talk interview where R-Truth, a shout out to Samoa Joe here with his rain protection.
The poncho, yeah. I mean, poncho. I guess it was rainy out there in Anaheim.
He said when he first met the Judgment Day, it was a perfect fit. Like the first time John Cena put on a pair of jean shorts, He hasn't cried this hard since the end of This Is Us. And this is how Genuine must have felt when he wrote Pony. And now he has new friends, Shawn Michaels and Triple H, which he's referring to DIY. This actually read better than it like came off on the screen, because I thought this one was not anywhere near the one they did a while back.
Live, Laugh, Love.
Yeah, that one was really funny. This one to me just kind of felt like we're just pushing the boundaries of the humor here. It was fine. It was not terrible, but you know, it was what it was.
It was cute, and I think an attempt to recapture maybe the vibe of Live, Laugh, Love. Ultimately, I felt like it was still effective. And again, like the alternative,
this guy might have been the second most popular person behind Cody on this show to this crowd.
Yeah, very true. Like this was shot outside of the Hana Center, and like if this was 2 years ago, we would have just had like a typical backstage interview without much like sort of attempt at being creative. This is at least an attempt to do something different, you know, using Jackie Redman and doing this almost as if it was like a news magazine type of piece. And I just continue to applaud them trying things a bit differently.
They plugged the OC Vibe deal with TKO that started with UFC 298 on Saturday.
Where are the OC Vibe committee members in the front row?
I was waiting. I mean, you know, they were maybe they didn't have front row seats. Samantha Irvin then introduces former Bellator lightweight champion Michael Chandler.
We know where all the front seats were going to on this particular show.
So they were doing a deal with Chandler where he was doing something in like a private box with, I think, some like contest winners or something like that. Mm-hmm. So Michael Chandler, first of all, he just grabs the mic from Samantha Irvin, and the man immediately turns into a 15-year-old and just cuts this promo on Conor McGregor. Chandler says he's the most entertaining UFC fighter on the planet and tells Conor McGregor, get your candy ass back in the octagon. If there was one thing very, very clear, is that Michael Cole doesn't follow any of this stuff, because Pat McAfee is basically explaining how this fight has been delayed. And I mean, I was just getting ready for the whole timeline. Michael, they were coaching Ultimate Fighter last year. Then Conor, he didn't sign on for the new fight. And now there's a big impasse. So that is, and then he's like, off camera, like, first of all, they cut off Chandler. Is he still going here? And they cut away. McAfee's telling us that he's taking his shirt off, which they never show. Cole has no idea what's going on here. And this was our synergy. So my timeline was pretty much every MMA person just thought this was awesome. And wrestling people, I think, thought less.
What did wrestling people think? I wasn't paying attention, but like what? What could you possibly be upset about with something like this? This was it was completely inoffensive. If you're a wrestling fan, if you don't watch the UFC, it would just be a segment that
ignore. Like for people that maybe don't know who this is and don't. Really
but care. Do you know who the Netflix executives are? Like who gives?
I don't
shit?
Think anyone was cheering the Netflix segment either. So.
But I mean, it doesn't bother me. Like this was, you know, like an ad. Like this to me was no different than showing a football player in the crowd.
I'll say this on the defense of those that did not like this, but understanding that the synergy is that, yes, this is involving, you know, Conor McGregor, and God knows when this fight will take place. This could be a very effective spot for, like, if Sean O'Malley was used here and he's fighting in 3 weeks' time and he's like a major star for them, like having a fight to promote in front of close to 2 million people. I could see that being like more strategic here than Chandler, where, yeah, you're promoting a fight, but this fight has absolutely no, it's not even a fight that they're promoting. It's not even a done deal or anything like that. So
yeah. In that sense, I find it kind of fascinating that it's not actually promoting something you could actually buy, at least not yet. Mm-hmm. I do sense that like maybe there's something to the WWE wanting a mention of Conor McGregor. Cause like, I mean, who is Michael Chandler? You know, he's only relevant perhaps to a larger WWE audience with his relationship with Conor McGregor.
Conor got the react, like when they introduced Michael Chandler, it's not like this arena went nuts, but when he did mention Conor McGregor, you did see some reaction here, because like, obviously that name is going to, if there's going to be one name drop, that's probably going to be among the ones that gets your even non-UFC fan to recognize him.
Exactly. And that's also like the type of celebrity that I think the WWE kind of covets as well. Not Michael Chandler, but Conor McGregor. You have Conor McGregor's, you know, would-be opponent calling him out on your show. So maybe that's why they let this guy take the microphone and basically cut it, you know, a pro wrestling promo here. How would you rate the promo from Michael Chandler?
I mean, he was fine. He looked very comfortable doing like a stereotypical wrestling promo, but it wasn't like he was nervous or anything. Like, he's done plenty of these promos and stuff. So he was fine.
Fucking turned like beet purple here.
Oh, it was quite something. So
yeah.
Screamed.
Yeah, this was a very much like he was feeling it.
He was feeling it. This guy's just been waiting forever for this fight. They filmed Tough, like, I think it was like last spring.
Well, he's waiting for that paycheck, is what he's waiting for.
This guy has not fought in a long time. These are some key years for him. Like, this is not a spring chicken either. He's waiting for this big
fight. So what's the status of Conor McGregor? Like, what exactly is the holdup at the moment?
I mean, depending on like who you ask, it's, you know, whether it's, you know, the number of fights that are left on his deal. I mean, Dana White is just giving it, like, he's been asked about this a lot, and he's talked about the fact, oh, he had the broken leg. But I mean, we're talking now, that was 3 years ago. And then he states, well, Conor doesn't need the money. It's like, Conor doesn't need the money. Does that mean he's never fighting again? Like, he's got money. He's got lots of money. There's plenty of fighters who have lots of money that fight. Floyd Mayweather had a lot of money, still did WrestleMania. So there you have it. So it's going to be Michael Chandler, and I guess it can't be the Big Show.
No, not now. No. Omos.
Could be. They cut from like basically from Chandler to Chad Gable, and God, was there a bit of a familiarity between these two. I mean, they could be cousins.
Okay.
It was because we went from one basically to the other here. Chad Gable's in the locker room to address Ivar, and both sides are going to leave their crews in the back for their match. And Ivar responded accepting this. He must have mentioned the gods like 8 times in this 30-second promo. The gods demand their battle come to an end, but the gods have chosen their path, and it goes straight through Chad Gable. So this is presented to you by the gods coming up later. Judgment Day against R-Truth, The Miz, and DX. They get the heat on Ciampa after the break. Then Gargano's in. They beat down him. This is all leading to the hot tag for R-Truth, who does his Cena spots, and the crowd's going wild. They're chanting for R-Truth. He's the only person they want to see on the babyface side. There's a procession of spots. Everyone is down, ending with a mid-ring crossbody by Balor and Ciampa. So Truth and Priest are in, and the South of Heaven is stopped. He hits a scissors kick to Priest. Crowd continues chanting for Truth. He teases a dive, but gets caught by Priest. The chokeslam is turned into a roll-up, and then after he goes for the AA, it's stopped by Priest, who finally hits the South of Heaven, and they pin R-Truth in 15 minutes and 40 seconds, and Judgment Day just stand over the fallen R-Truth while Miz and DIY are just leaning against the desk, defeated on the floor.
There's nothing they could do. They failed.
Think about the heat.
I mean, I felt it was a pretty standard match to the first two commercial breaks, but by the time it got going in the third segment here, three segments for this match, Truth continued to receive these massive, massive reactions from this audience. So makes you wonder what this is all leading to. It seems like it's Judgment Day's A program right now, heading towards WrestleMania.
I think R-Truth is going to get something of note at WrestleMania, like something, and whatever it is, it's probably tied in somewhere with the Judgment Day.
They got the match with Dunn and Bate, of course, but who are the other sort of tag team challengers that are being built up at the moment that you could see for a WrestleMania tag match?
They're actually building up the New Day quite a bit.
That's true. Yeah. But against Imperium, if they beat Imperium, will they be hot enough to take on Judgment Day? Maybe. But I see it ultimately ending with something with Truth again.
Maybe R-Truth is going to maybe he is going to end up getting something big for night three of WrestleMania on the Raw on Monday.
Sure. Yes.
I have no idea. Jackie Redmond interviews Sami Zayn. This is just Jackie Redmond is just like, so you lost again. Yeah, Jackie, I did. I have to pause this feud with Drew. I can't get obsessed with him because then I won't be able to move forward. You know, he's taking his chips and he's like, he's leaving.
I can't beat him. I'm not winning this feud.
It's like, I've lost this feud. I'm moving on. He said, I know there's a path for me to WrestleMania. I need to go with my feeling and my gut to do something historic. I'm a contender and I know I will be a champion.
As he gives like, you know, a very sort of, I don't know, self-doubting face as he says those last words. So I'm very interested to see where they're going with Sami Zayn here. You know, it could be a championship run as a babyface, or it could be setting the path for a heel run. And either way, as long as you put this talent in front of a microphone on a big stage with title aspirations, you know this guy is going to deliver. So if this is just strictly the promise of a very serious and important, like sort of high ranking Sami Zayn storyline, I'm already on board.
Becky Lynch comes out and she says she's done a lot of things here and there's not too many new things except my hat. Do you like the hat? And her backwards baseball hat is going to stay. It's part of her new look. And she is going to like, does this not look like the most natural accessory for Becky Lynch?
Yeah.
Okay. But she's going into Elimination Chamber for the first time, and inevitably her and Rhea Ripley are going to collide. Pretty much we have booked this WrestleMania match, but we have to get through this match first on Saturday. She's riding a wave of momentum and she's the best she's ever been, but I know I have to beat five of the best on Saturday. So Liv Morgan interrupts. She likes her hat, but she is not a fan of hearing how Becky is going to win this match. I don't care who the best is. This is about revenge. I used to be partners with Rhea Ripley until she turned on me. Then I became a partner with Raquel Rodriguez, and Rhea Ripley cost us the titles. And then the next week she injured my shoulder and she had to go through all this exposition. And it was like painful how much she had to recount here of the whole history between them. This was screaming for a video package. Then Raquel comes out, reminding them, hey, guys, Nia Jax might be champion. And there's only one woman big enough and strong enough to take on either Rhea or Nia Jax. Okay. Naomi comes out. She has come back to WWE with a new purpose and to climb to the top. Got it. Tiffany Stratton is out. She says, Naomi, when you left an empty space. And while you were gone, no one cares about the past, and that's all I see in front of me. Four people from the past. Which has got to be a hit to Liv Morgan. I mean, she's now part of the past.
I mean, she's been around for quite a while.
I guess she has. She just doesn't feel like an old veteran.
She's been here for how long?
She's definitely lasted a lot of releases.
Closer to a decade than I guess. Not.
Well, the final one out is Bianca Belair, because everyone had to be represented here. So she is out, and she says she's the only one of the six to have won an Elimination Chamber, and she is going to continue her undefeated streak. Stratton then tells Belair she is so last year. And then all six just decide to fight, including Bianca Belair in these heels. I don't know how she could even move in these things. And then Nia Jax comes in, and I'm not kidding. She destroys all six of these women, just runs through all of them and leaves all of them laying going into Elimination Chamber. So, I mean, you are building up Nia Jax as the challenger. This was not completely reductive, but I mean, it was like quite the go home segment for this chamber match.
Right. I didn't get too upset by, you know, Nia laying everybody out. I felt like because maybe we are so like looking ahead to Rhea versus Becky Lynch, I thought it was important to give Nia something. It could also just simply be a case of them like not having enough women segments on the show, and therefore let's just combine everything. Let's have all the women in the chamber come out and talk, and then let's just have Nia destroy everybody just so we could build up both. I felt it was like ultimately fine here. Everybody is going to be challenging to get possibly revenge on Nia Jax or Rhea Ripley here. This was like this match here, you know, with this women's chamber, because like, you know, you take so many weeks to just simply build the participants, you don't have that much time for everybody to be able to cut promos and kind of tell their own story. And this was them trying to, I think, give as much mic time as they could to everybody to build some interest. And at the very least, I thought it gave us a good glimpse of like where people stand on the microphone in terms of their abilities. And I felt like Tiffany Stratton sounded really good here. You know, she, for somebody who maybe hasn't looked the most impressive in her in-ring matches so far, I thought she came across really, really well on the microphone, full of confidence, and the lone heel in the entire group, by the way. So, you know, she actually did feel like the center of the universe. And I also felt like, you know, she made a big impression just simply through her presence and delivery. I also felt like Bianca Belair sounded really good in this segment. She sounded a lot more comfortable and charismatic than she did during her much of her babyface championship run. Could be due to like a lack of pressure, or could just be due to experience, but I want to hear more of this Bianca. Naomi, I felt, had too short of a promo. Like, she has come back and really hasn't had much of a chance to speak at all. And crowd still wants to hear more from her. Crowd still really sees the, like, wants her to be in a big role, but it doesn't feel like she's in a big role at yet. I felt Liv was kind of disappointing. You know, she was the one with the most story going into this chamber, with sort of a direct, other than Becky, of course, you know, with a direct reason to want to get revenge on Rhea Ripley. But I thought she sounded a bit timid, you know, in this little sort of segment. Didn't sound like the confidence was there yet. So hope to see that grow in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a rule of the amount of interruptions you can do in a segment. Once it's six people out there, mm-hmm. I think the cap for me is like two interruptions. I think that's enough. The just cavalcade of appearances. It's just a,
I mean, it was just, yeah, it maybe in that sense, it wasn't so creative, but it was just a way for everybody to get mic time in succession, right?
And learn that Naomi has a new purpose. Don't know what that purpose is, but it's a new one. Gunther says this will be the greatest night of Jay's career, trying to fulfill a dream of winning a singles title, but he's going to have to keep on dreaming after tonight. Then we go to Shinsuke Nakamura, who was in a very smoky room and addresses Sami Zayn. You want to be a contender? First of all, fighters fight. True fighters don't whine to everyone to try and get a spotlight. You want a spotlight? I'll give you one. I'll make sure you stay an underdog by breaking you again, and then you can bask in everyone's sympathy and show them that their contender is a pretender. You want more Shinsuke? Anytime, anywhere. So as much as Sami Zayn knows he needs to move on and not get derailed by distractions, he's going to revisit this match with Shinsuke Nakamura next week in San Jose.
I guess when Nakamura is calling you out, what can you do? You know, so TV match.
Yes.
Thinking.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Maybe he loses this one too.
Same. Maybe he loses everything. Yeah.
No, yeah.
Just keep going down, and maybe he'll realize the curse is Jackie Redmond in these interviews.
Could be.
Switch things up. They showed Callum Walsh, the undefeated boxer from Cork, Ireland, who's fighting next month in New York. And that takes us to Ivar and Chad Gable. I was actually looking forward to this when they announced this match, and this did not disappoint. These two have great chemistry together. We start off with a rolling kapu kick from Chad Gable, knocking Ivar off the turnbuckle, and he dives to him on the floor. And then Gable takes a powerbomb onto the barricade. That sets up the commercial. Ivar goes to run at Gable, misses, and just launches himself into this LED screen on the ring. And then he recovers to hit a seated senton off the top, misses the doomsault. So Gable deadlifts him up for the German, hits it, straps come down, crowd's going nuts. And then the moonsault comes off the top and connects, but Ivar kicks out. Gable immediately goes to the ankle lock, pulls him to the middle, and Ivar taps in 8 minutes and 23 seconds. As Alpha Academy come out to celebrate. And this kind of felt like the end of this, like, forever feud in length between Alpha Academy and Ivar.
I would certainly hope so. I don't know what other combinations they could go to. I mean, we've done every single combination, and Ivar has beaten everybody. Like, he faced Tozawa twice, right? Is that right? I don't know. I don't remember. Don't really care anymore. And this seemed to really kind of put an end to it all. But I actually felt like, despite maybe how much TV time they've spent on this in the months prior, I kind of felt like the match started off a bit cold. You know, it feels like this feud between these two factions has really not been top of mind. But because these two are so good, the David Goliath dynamic was enough to, I think, invest everybody watching into this match. And Ivar did that seated senton.
Yeah.
And that got such a big reaction that I feel like that could be his new finisher. Now you ask, is that move any better for somebody's knees at his size than a moonsault? I'm not entirely sure, but I have to think it's at least easier to perform, you know, on a nightly basis than a moonsault.
I mean, it looked good.
Yeah. Looked great. Got a big reaction.
I enjoyed this. I thought these two were great. Then we have a graphic for all the different time zones for the Elimination Chamber. From Australian Western Standard Time to Hawaiian Standard Time, they have you covered. So 5 a.m. Eastern.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so 6 p.m. if you're in Australia, but everywhere else, we're talking midnight to 5 a.m. For most of the world. So some of us will be watching live. You know, for some of us, these are normal hours.
I promise you there will be a not insignificant portion that will tune in Saturday at the normal time slot on Saturday evening.
I mean, we've done it in a similar sense for New Japan. You know, those of us that are watching New Japan are used to it. Those of us who watch sports like F1 are kind of used to something like this. So I think it's a very helpful graphic.
You know, what's going to be the best part is people that wake up forgetting about this. Spoilers.
Mm-hmm. No sympathy.
None. Not one. Kathy Kelly is with Drew McIntyre. He says Cody's on the run of a lifetime and no one's pinned him, or one person has pinned him in this whole run, and now I have two. I'm not a hypocrite. I just see the bigger picture. I know that the Bloodline was getting involved, but I'm doing this for the title and for the fans. So I've got to win the chamber. He also, SmackDown is happening in real time for him. So he said, I've got to go to SmackDown to face LA Knight, and then I've got to fly halfway across the world to Perth.
He's a workhorse.
He's got like an 8-hour difference from the time SmackDown ends to when that pay-per-view starts on Saturday morning. And he's going to be at the press conference on Thursday night. So Drew McIntyre, how he does it. I mean, just incredible.
He's such a workhorse. He can make his jet fly faster than is possible.
Yeah. He read about Hulk Hogan wrestling 400 days a year because of the international dateline. And he was like, you know what? That's my aspirational figure.
Yeah. But it's a type of promo that I think totally fits this Drew character. I mean, he's simply at this point delusional. He knows what criticisms of him are of him being a hypocrite, accepting the Bloodline's help, but he still thinks he's acting righteously. So he is Hulk Hogan. That is the character at this point.
Delusional.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Got it. You know, it really looks like he has a mullet from this angle.
From this particular shot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
New Day predict that Jey Uso is going to win tonight. That would be incorrect. And they warn Imperium, who tried to end Kofi's career. We are the industry standard for tag team wrestling, and it isn't over until we say it's over. And they make the challenge for next Monday for a street fight. Really good promo here from the New Day.
Very much so. Yeah. I mean, they continue their sort of renewed mean streak. No bootios, no donuts, no like unicorns for a long, long time now. No catchphrases even in this promo. They're serious, and I'm really liking the direction. I hope they go even further with it. Who do you think wins this feud?
I think the New Day gets the big win next week.
Mm. Yeah, could be them facing Judgment Day.
So next week, they've announced a street fight and Nakamura against Zayn coming off Elimination Chamber. There was a professional bull rider that was showing.
Every sport represented.
Everyone. I was waiting for like the Frisbee players to be represented.
Is that an Endeavor thing as well?
Endeavor runs PBR. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So anybody that they have an attachment to.
Just put them in Anaheim was just.
Where's the bull riding call out, you know, for their Conor McGregor? Who's the Conor McGregor of bull riding?
You know, Dana White owns a bull, and Donald Cerrone is going to ride this bull in May, and they're building up to this. It's the name of the bull is like Twisted Steel, I think. Oh, done like wow. A tail of the tape for the two of them. So,
okay.
Did you hear Donald Cerrone's interview on the last Power Slap event?
Are you seriously asking me that question?
I'm only saying it because this clip just circulated everywhere. They interviewed him about his thoughts on Power Slap. He's like, it's awesome. It's like, if you want to see and hear brain damage in person, this is the sport for you. And he's saying this unironically. And it was just the best clip. Like he said, it's literally CTE. That's what he called it. He's like, if you want to hear CTE. Anyway, on to the main event. It's Gunther and Jey Uso for the IC title. Real tough pick 'em because both have 90 ratings in 2K24. Gunther attacks him and ends up on the floor and drops him on the edge of the apron. That's our first commercial break. Jey sets up for the hip attack but gets hit with a missile drop kick and a power bomb for a two count. Jey recovers, hits a suicide dive. We go to a second commercial break and we come back. Jay's offense gets stopped by one big chop, and he holds on to Jey, delivering more chops. Jey tries to slap him. Powerbomb gets blocked, and Jey runs the ropes and spears Gunther, his first of several. And then Gunther comes back with a splash off the top, and Jey lands a spear, then hits another one on the edge of the apron, hits a third spear on the floor, and then he hits what I will give him like a partial spear in the ring. I didn't know quite what this was, but it wasn't a Braun Breaker spear. Let's put it that way. Uso splash connects. 1, 2, ding, 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 ding. And the referee's like, oh, my arm. I can't count three. I can't call the audible here. I've got to figure out what this bell's going on. And it's Jimmy Uso ringing the bell. And that is not cause for any like disqualification. This is just like interruption in the match. Even this fan running on the field.
Even this bell ringer like did not make any attempt to stop this person from grabbing his hammer and basically completely ruining this matchup.
This is Fred Ottman's kid, isn't it?
That's it. He's traumatized. He knows not to get involved in anything physical. He's
listen, I'm here to do my job and I'm not here to get involved with these people. I don't know who this is.
Yeah, that makes sense. Maybe he's currently engaged in a litigation and knows he can't risk himself.
Yeah. Trying to make this guy look like a Thai fool. So Jimmy rings the bell. And this just causes distraction from everybody. Like, whoa, you're not the timekeeper and the match was not over. So the pin is not registered and Gunther applies a choke from behind, but Jey rolls on top, gets out, super kicks Gunther, and then dives onto Jimmy and the security guards on the floor, goes for another Uso splash, but Gunther gets up the knees and cradles Jey in 18 minutes and 53 seconds, retaining the belt. And Jimmy returns, attacking his brother, super kicks him, and now he has cost him the match against Roman at SummerSlam and the IC title against Gunther. And he tells Jey, I'll always be the big brother. And hits an Uso splash at the end. So this looks like that the setup at the Rumble seemed to be like this is the Mania program with these two.
Yeah, the Rumble interaction, I think, speaking for a lot of people, was maybe a little bit disappointing in terms of crowd reaction. Like, especially coming out of the Rumble, it was really not on, I think, anybody's sort of top of mind. And maybe a part of that reason is because these two have been kept apart for so long, we don't even exactly remember why they split up in the first place. You know, you mentioned Jimmy getting involved to cost him the match against Roman. I don't even remember the finish to that one. I was there. So they needed something to kind of update and refresh and reheat the feud. And, you know, having
that
Jimmy
is one to definitely go back and listen to that. Wasn't the promo that I didn't want you to get corrupted by the title like Roman has, and I was doing a favor for you. It was really convoluted, and it was Anyway,
this simplifies the story. Jimmy cost Jay his first singles title win. You know, and you can make mention of all that other stuff, but you needed something to reignite the feud if they are going to head towards WrestleMania for it, and it looks like they are. And I thought this was effectively done. The match was great. I felt like it was like maybe my favorite Jay Uso singles match, at least up this current run. And you know, Gunther is just the level of performer that is able to, I think, drag that out of you. The David Goliath aspect again here really amplified, I think, the great level of crowd interaction that Jay already provoked. And the intensity was off the charts, and, you know, good angle at the end as well. So what do you think?
Well, when they put together the pristine WrestleMania video package and you have Jay Uso stating, "There's still people that can't tell us apart," I want them to take this clip of Way saying, "I thought this was Jay Uso's best singles match." He's got to be able to emphasize the difference here. No, it was a very good match. I thought as well. I thought that the near falls were good. I wasn't crazy about the finish, but it was it's getting you to the direction that you want to get to with Jay and Jimmy. And you know, watching this, it was you know, when they set this program up, I looked at Jay as is someone like that you put the belt on, even if you were going this Jimmy direction. Like, these two having a match for a singles belt is kind of compelling as well, but this is also one that doesn't need it. I think the clock should be ticking on Gunther. Like, you should be, like, whether it's Sammy, whether it's Bron Breakker, whether it's Chad Gable, like, just, I think now
it's
you
not,
need
to, it's not going to be Chad Gable. There's no way. He just beat Ivar after struggling to beat Ivar for three months.
His vision is clear, okay? His pathway is straight, okay? He's got to find his pathway to WrestleMania now.
I don't think like Gable so far, like, you know, down the card right now. Could be Sammy. I personally think it's more likely that it's Braun.
Well, it could be. He's on SmackDown now. Now, after we just watched this, I mean, the man almost got arrested coming onto Raw with Jimmy Uso. I mean, how did you do a SmackDown talent?
You're right. I don't know.
So there you go. That was Raw from the Honda Center. And a fairly substantial edition of Raw.
I thought it was a really hot show. I mean, you know, they constantly mention, 13,000 people in attendance? And it sounded like it, you know, really, really hot crowd. And I thought they had some, at least two, like, very good matches to start and to close the show. And just, like, you know, like, pretty typical build, I would say, for the rest of the Elimination Chamber matches. Michael Chandler popping a vein, talking about Conor McGregor.
Might have popped a few veins in that promo and could have lost a shirt on top of it. So, yes, that was Raw from Monday night. And we'll open it up to any super chats, feedback, if you want to weigh in on what you saw tonight on Raw or any other stories that are circulating. The floor is yours.
Slim Sieber sends a super chat of $5. Thank you, Slim. He says, "Do you see any more matches being added? I know the Waller Effect segment will probably go long, but four matches for a stadium show seems kind of weak."
The Grayson Waller effect. I'm sure it will go long. You know, I don't think they're in the habit of just, you know, just ballooning up these events to be, you know, gargantuan sized events. But four matches, they will still squeeze this into 3 hours. I am sure. Like, this will be a 3 hour show with Grayson Waller effect in there, which, I mean, you would think like that is issuing the challenge for the tag match and Cody finally taking on Seth as his shield, for lack of a better term. I don't see them adding any more matches because there really isn't they just don't seem to be hinting at anything else that you would add. I think we are going to get a four match show.
I think any matches that they add on at this point would just be filler. And I almost get the sense like that this company understands that, less is more now, which is crazy to say considering they used to put in on, like, you know, I don't know, like 7 hour long cards. But you look at
that men's chamber match is probably going to be a 45 minute match. So I'm not exaggerating.
The Royal Rumble also was in a stadium and it also had four matches. It didn't even have that, at least an advertised talking. Did it have a talking segment in between? I'm trying to remember. Oh man.
Off my head, I don't think so.
It's been anyway, but both chamber matches are going to go very long. You have a talking segment that's also going to potentially go very long. That's, and all the commercials, you know, in between in video packages, that's 3 hours already.
How long does Rhea Ripley and Nia Jax go? Longer than 15 minutes.
I'm going to say 10 to 15.
That would be in the range of where I would go. All right. We have a few pieces of feedback here. Let's start off with Manny from Pacoima. A solid Raw that kicked off with a hot match at the House of Mouse. It was great to see Gunther cut a promo from the GCW alleyway locker room at the Ukrainian Cultural Center here in LA. Truth once again proved he's comedy gold. Free Nick Mysterio. Mike Bailey and Elijah had a great match at Revolver. What a show. With the appearances of Velveteen Dream, I want to ask a question. AAA has been booking Marty Scurll on their shows, but don't advertise their shows on any of their social media. Do you think that makes them look bad as a company, or is it simply a case of if no one really knows, then it's not that big of a deal? And if CMLL were to send Tessa Blanchard to AEW, would the AEW audience react to it as well? Chop tease. Okay. Okay, so in those senses, yeah, like AAA has been utilizing Marty Scurll of late. They're also booking Alberto Del Rio, El Patron as well. Again, I think it's like my thing is allow your consumer to make that decision. If you are going to be selling tickets for an event, I think that if you're using a Marty Scurll, that it should be promoted. Like if you remember, New Japan took a lot of heat for the way they tried to use him on back in 2021 when they were doing like the closed door tapings, and it ended up where there was so much blowback to that they ended up not continuing to use him and edited him off that show when they came back as well. Tessa Blanchard, I think that's a really different case. Where it's like, I'm just not putting that in the same level of some of the other accusations. Yes, there are some that I think would have issue with Tessa Blanchard being utilized, but I just look at it as something very different, and one where, I mean, it's, I don't equate it to the same things that are being accused of some of these other people.
I guess I ask, like, what are these promotions gaining by hiring these controversial acts that they continue to do so despite, you know, risking backlash?
Like, there are people that I think they feel like they're names. And if you have
if you're not promoting them, then what benefit is a name?
Well, I mean, in the case of like, it's like, this is like on social media, they are still like utilizing them. They're talents that they're believing, like there is a value in using them.
Yeah, I suppose you could not. Some of the reactions might be sort of localized too. You know, we're not talking about American promotions here. Or sorry, like not in the case of a AAA. Every case is different when we're talking about, you know, these people that we're talking about, right? So it's hard to make a blanket statement of like, you know, what should be done, because I think everyone deserves its own sort of level of scrutiny. I think ultimately audiences should be voting with their wallets. Like, you know, you might book somebody, a promotion that you go to might book somebody that you're not a fan of. Then it's up to, like, whether or not they advertise it, I feel like the audience should let them know by not buying a ticket the next time.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you're not going to have a uniform response. Like, there are some that are not going to have that that issue. But I think that's the fairest way, is just you put someone on. And if you're a promoter, this person is either going to enhance your business, hurt your business, or will be of no difference. And then you have to make that decision as a promoter. But I mean, that is where you do have, especially at like the independent level, whereas you are the consumer, you get to make a statement that you are going to support them or not. Like if you are someone that goes to a local indie and you don't want to see some performer book that you have an issue over, and you and your five friends decide we're not going to go, and this is a place that draws like 300 people, okay, it's like five people opting not to go, it's not going to like destroy a show, but it's nonetheless, it's a lot more power than, say, a WWE or an AEW booking someone, and you feel like my buying a ticket or not is not really going to convey any kind of strong message if there are not numbers that agree with my stance. So right. Anyway,
let's go up next to Muggin, who says Anaheim was fiery from start to finish. Raw was bookended strongly with Drew, Cody, and Jake Gunther, but the damn bloodline happened. There was callbacks in the opener's finisher to WrestleMania last year, and Drew's slight hesitation about the chaos working in his favor for once could mean that he could be the difference maker to the Codemengers. It's not to help Cody, but to get back at Roman and Co. And it was easy to see the Jimmy interference coming. The two matches were damn good despite that. I'm so ready for a future where the bloodline doesn't plague another match again. The road to Philly got a lot bumpier. The drone shots and different camera angles are a godsend. I love the newer looks production-wise.
All right. And then Annie here is the last one. This roster is aflush with good talkers, and I feel Raw's been the show with the best promos over the last 4 to 5 months. They've even taken a page out of AEW's book and started doing more 2 to 3 minute backstage interviews, which are consistently good and a huge upgrade on the invisible camera stuff. Sammy, Drew, Gunther, and New Day all had strong promo work. Sammy's promo was the best, juxtaposing his journey with that of Drew, who was swallowed by obsession. Unfortunately, the Elimination Chamber build segment snuck into my 90-minute cut of Raw, and it stood in stark contrast to the rest as it was quite robotic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for the feedback and weighing in on tonight's show and other topics. Again, we are going to be back later on this week. You can post feedback on the forum for WrestleMania 24. That will be out Thursday for members at postwrestlingcafe.com. And Tuesday, what do you have coming up, Wei?
We have the next edition of The Wellness Policy, 3 p.m. Eastern Time at youtube.com/postwrestling. Jordan, Neil, and myself will be talking about our love of professional wrestling. So we usually are a podcast that doesn't talk about wrestling. That's a part of a pro wrestling network. But this is all going to be about just our fandom of pro wrestling. So, yeah.
Looking forward to it. Always a fun time on The Wellness Policy. Until next time, we will speak with you on Wednesday, and thank you for tuning in to Rewind to Raw.